Hello, everybody. Today I have my second guest ever on the podcast for the second time. Nicholas, how's it going today?
Hey, pretty good. How's it going?
Pretty good. We had a chat now so far because our vibe is just like we have the same energy and everything. So you were about to ask me?
Yeah, no, I was just seeing your visual effects that you create. Do you work in Unreal Engine? Like, are they performant visual effects or do you do mostly like Houdini effects?
So I've never done Houdini effects, honestly, if I'm honest with you. I've only been working with real-time VFX, which is the performative one, right? So you work with Niagara and or VFX Graph or the Shuriken system in Unity. And Godot has its own system. So yeah, those are the effects I work with.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Actually, you should show me, send me, I know we're recording, but you should show me your any visual effects reel or whatever, because we do have clients right now that are looking for effects, and it seems harder to find, because we do tech art and tech animation, and it seems a bit, you know, more difficult to find someone that can do performant visual effects, you know?
Yeah. Send it over, you know, either I'll be a good fit or someone else, because like we in the real-time VFX community, we're super tight, and we're not afraid to just like give you know, opportunities to others. Like I just had two guests on, Deanna and Ben, and they're together, right? So they're a couple and they work in visual effects. Each one has their own style, man. Like one project could fit the other just much better, and you know, no one takes it personal in that way that you could, you know, I could suggest someone to you, you know, but I know you will do the same if they come my way, right? So it makes sense.
You're moving people around for what makes the most sense on each project, right? So you can get the best, pretty much best outcome for both sides.
It's just it's a toxic free environment for like working. Like even we have a server like where everybody's there. It's called Real Time VFX Server, Discord server.
Yeah.
It used to be a forum, but everything you need to learn is basically there. And even if you don't know how to do something, you just ask there. And people will help you out, basically, which is awesome.
Yeah, and it's time consuming. It's a whole beast, you know, just getting into to visual effects, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a full-time job. It's hard to support that and also build frameworks and other things in the back end, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So listen, man, I think a lot of the listeners right now have no idea who you are. So let's give a little intro about you are, who you are and so on.
So I'm Nicholas. I've been in the games industry for 15 years. I've worked at Volition, Arcane Studio. I worked at 2K for a while. I now started my own tech art studio. So for like 3 years, our company's been doing co-development and just helping a lot of other AA and AAA studios. So we even worked with WolfEye, which is super cool because it's the ex-Arcane Studio team. And we worked with the Night Dive team on System Shock, which is really cool. So it's one of our first projects. And ever since, things have been just kind of rolling and moving forward. But we definitely had a rough year last year, you know. So we had like 6 months, some roughness, but we survived. So.
Yeah, and how are things looking right now after the whole, you know, shit show?
Yeah, so well, the shit show happened, I'd say, around October of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then things started clearing up around February, which is pretty good. But, I mean, the industry's been really, really rough. But once there was like a few projects... you know, with VCs and releasing some funding and some projects beginning of the year allowed us to kind of communicate with other, you know, smaller studios, like I said, and just kind of see like what their needs are. But funding is kind of coming back, but it's very tight. So instead of it being like, you know, everyone gets funding, it's like, okay, maybe only 10% of those studios. So it's a lot less. And I feel like we have to do a lot more and we charge less as well. So we went from charging.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is sad to hear.
So. Yeah. I know it's a thing. It's the industry. And it's something that we weren't ready for. So we were making a lot of money. Like I said, it was like 2022 to 2024. And then suddenly everything happened for 6 months where it was dry. So a lot of, you know, things happened throughout our studio. But like I said, because we survived, we're now back in it. But now we're doing more for a little bit less. So we're right now charging about 20% less than what we were doing. But now we have all these projects coming back up. So,
but it has its own thing. Like for example, if let's say a company really needs to outsource tech art, they could pretty much outsource it outside of the US, right? That's technically possible. And the wages in Europe, for example, They weigh less. That's what I think a lot of people don't know about that. Like what when you see what a person like you might charge in the US,
it's, in the US.
Go ahead.
Yeah, making 100,000, that's 500,000. I mean, it's it's like half the amount.
Absolutely.
Sorry, 100,000, it is like 50,000 in Europe. So yeah, the overhead in Europe is way less, even like less than that. You know, like you kind of.
Like, Ellen, if you're from the US, your competitive spirit is up 10 times. You might have to think, like, you not only need to be super good at what you do, but also you need to probably offer, like, put an offer out there that the person who's hiring you cannot refuse. Like, this guy will support me even more.
You nailed the whole thing. Yeah. So we actually had a contract where we lost the co-development contract because we were a bit too expensive. So it was kind of moved out to Europe. So the difference is like, even though you're paying more, it doesn't mean that you can technically just quickly outsource like something like frameworks and pipelines and things. Mm. And what we realized is like, if you kind of go towards like, okay, we're going to go pick up three tech artists from Europe, they might not be like senior or principal or director. So the difference is with our studio, it's directing, like we've shipped games, we've done these things. For 15 years, right? So I feel like we get things done super fast. So even though they're saving money up front, I feel like that the pipeline, the framework, the content creation, it gets a lot slower, especially with different time zones, even communication between different people. Some people like cameras on, cameras off, some, you know, however it is with their different cultures. And like I said, with us, we're like the tech art studio where it's just like, oh, we only have like a few days. Can we figure this out? Do we, or like we have a week or we have 6 months. Like this is high priority. We can't drop the ball. What do we do? So at least us, I feel like we're like the silver bullet for anything to do with tech art and tech animation. Like we have to find a solution that works.
Yeah. So, for that job, you kind of need, so if you're going to hire someone from Europe, you're probably going to have to pay like twice as much in time, and I have nothing against hiring someone from Europe. I am from Europe, but I'm trying to explain the industry here for people who don't know much. People from the US who have worked for you, like for example, you worked for 15 years. You probably worked on games like Prey, right? You have the experience. Yeah. You have been in most like AAA games are made in the US. That's a fact. Why that's the case, I don't know, man. The US has like the best education and the best.
I can see back in the day, right, where people are building their own games, and then a lot of VCs and funding. You know, I bet you were just kind of stemmed here for a lot of those AAA game developments.
Yeah,
and we used to build our own engines before Unreal Engine 3. Oh, sorry, before Unreal Engine 3, everyone was kind of either creating their own or trying to license. Trying to license an engine out. And now things are also very different, so it allows everyone else from other countries to also kind of build, you know, their own games and IPs, not worry about the technology and trying to build an entire framework, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's just things are well established in the US, I feel. And this is why like a guy like you might have a little more knowledge by trial and error way earlier than anyone else. So that is your advantage. Your disadvantage, however, is that you have to charge like just that much more. Because of like how the taxes are set up and everything else in America is just a whole different beast.
I mean, we are expensive in the US, but we also built a bubble, right?
Yeah.
Like before COVID, it's like, okay, you're senior, you're making 100-something thousand in the US around. And then suddenly once COVID happened, a lot of these bigger studios started pulling, you know, other directors and leads and even seniors, and they were throwing money at the problem. So they're like, hey, we're Sony or we're Microsoft or whoever they are. Mm. A lot of the corporate companies, they were throwing money, which disrupted the whole industry. So a lot of leads and seniors would leave. So even our pay raise really went sky high, which it should never have probably been to that point anyway. So we kind of like built strange bubble, you know, where we probably would have been happy and satisfied making a bit less, but it kind of got off the rails, I feel like. And now, like I said, the bubble popped. So now we're back here. We're like, okay, we were making this. Now we're 20% less. So what we do charge is 20% less than what we were charging.
Well,
I mean, it's more work. So we have contracts, but yeah.
I mean, the math behind the whole thing must have been crazy for you, like to just figure out how much less you have to charge, where to position yourself, because like it's one thing to learn tech art.
Yeah, we had to feel it, so we had to learn it organically.
Yeah.
We talked to contractors, they're like, okay, So, I mean, we're transparent, right? So we usually do charge $100 an hour. So we're now at $80 an hour. So the math was easy to figure out, but we had to find a sweet spot. So that sweet spot is, okay, at us being a technical directing studio to do co-development for tech art, where's that line? Where's that limit, right? Mm. And right now it's like 80 seems to be, like I said, we're happy still making 80. So even though we're happier making 100, I don't think that we should be greedy because, again, the industry is rough. People are still looking for jobs and things. And things are probably going to keep getting rougher. So the difference is, like, we didn't stop. So we just had to reevaluate. And also, like, coming out with, like, new demo reels and new tech, we just kept rolling and rolling and rolling until we picked up these projects again. But there was definitely a weird hiatus thing where it was, like, you know, like I said, like 5 to 6 months with no work, no nothing. So even contracts, just trying to negotiate, you know, it's like, we don't really have that now. So,
So that's a whole beast, like business, the business aspect of it. It's one thing to learn tech art, and it's a whole different beast to just like know how business work, because that's like, you know, negotiating, trying to understand the hourly fee instead of a flat fee, and what is the project based contracts, like, bro, like no one fucking prepares you.
So the good thing about like hourly, it's like you're doing co-development, so you are throwing people at the problem, which isn't a great thing. But the thing is, like, that is what a lot of studios are currently looking for, right? Now, if we're doing like per project or per pipeline or per rig, right? Like okay, this is maybe $1,000 or $5,000. The thing is, there's iterations involved, and even though we can make a lot of money, if we were able to figure out how to monetize and how to quickly do those things, like, okay, every human rig is $1,000, and we knew exactly, like, for sure that there's no real iterations in between, like, a day or 2 days, because that gets expensive. Once you can, you know, like, break down your time schedule and your skill set and monetize, like, how long everything will take, it's just hard to kind of set up those brackets sometimes because they're so organic, so... It might not be a human character, or it's a human character with a dress, or a human character with whatever. So there's so many things where you can say, okay, it might not take a day, it might take 4 days. So to avoid that scope, I feel like right now we've been just like, so a lot of our people right now, we have people in different countries all over. So we have one person in Canada, we have one person in India, one person in Egypt.
Cool.
So we just kind of like distribute and we work together as a team whenever there's work on those projects.
Yeah,
that's how we keep the overhead low, you know, as a whole. We don't have a studio. We're all remote. We all know how to work together. So
yeah, that's like, I feel like that's the future. And I talked about this a lot on the podcast. Like, that's the future of game development going forward, is that, you know, you have the group of people, your bubble, the people who you could really, you know, you could really work with. You don't have to be necessarily like married to those people where like all the finances and everything you have to split.
So that's what corporate thinks. They think like we all need to kind of like stick together, and that's not what it is. So it really is getting everyone that believes in the product that you're building. Whatever it is, like seeing that vision and believing what you're doing, because corporate too, they get into a position where they're just hiring. Like, are you a character artist? Are you a this?
Yeah.
And in the end, it's like, no, you want like it's going back to the old school ways. And that's what we talked about before. It's like 10 guys in the basement in their underwear making video games. Right.
Awesome.
So it is still kind of going back into like the old school way of doing things for AA. Right. So it's remote work. There's like 10 or 20 people all working remotely, but we all believe in what we're developing. So have a clear goal. We have something a target, and we all believe in it. And again, corporate is like, oh, we just lost our lead or our tech art or whatever it is, our animator, and now we're hiring on another one and this person and this person. So it's always moving. It's always so organic, and it's hard to find out like who's really there for the game and for the company, right? Because it might only be there for a paycheck. And in the end, that's where you kind of like lose a lot of that inspiration. So for small studios, like, we tend to work harder or like longer hours, because it's like, why are we going to work 8 hours for 5 days a week if we give a shit about this project? This is our project. Yeah. And that's how I feel. Like, a lot of the people on our team, like, I don't ask them to do weekends or whatever, but everyone's super communicative. You know, like, they always reach out. We always communicate. So it's like anything that's going on, we're like super active at any time. So it just keeps things moving forward, even during the hard times. Like, we just kept moving forward. And that was the most important thing. Was like not giving up. So we didn't go stale. Like I said, even when we didn't have work, we were still learning. We were still trying to get up on new technology. We were trying to figure out how we can get to the next, you know, stage, or even like just kind of stay afloat. But I would say like that's it. It's like once you give up, then you lost. You know,
absolutely.
So you just have to keep rolling.
It's so competitive, and, also in the sense of like the stuff that you need to learn, right? Keep up with
it again.
Like it's so competitive in the term of like how many things you need to learn to keep up with the technology, like AI and all of this stuff that are coming out, right?
Generate content and all the stuff even inside of Unreal, things are moving where you just learn the old pipeline, maybe an old retargeter, and then suddenly a month or like a week later, suddenly hey, new retargeting comes out, and everything that you just learned for like last few weeks or a year or months or whatever it is, it's now like null, right? Because a lot of the it's true. Like there's tons of systems and things that I've learned, and then suddenly it gets removed or replaced with just a better system or something that is like, oh, this is a bit more scalable.
I feel like we need Epic on this conversation. Honestly, we need to give them we need direct communication with them. So please, what kind of feature are you gonna bring up next week we don't have to learn it?
Yeah, it keeps changing and evolving. So making the games, it does get kind of hard because you're either on old technology and you want the latest engine, but the latest engine has something where it might conflict, you know, or not conflict. They do pretty good at like holding onto like legacy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so they're able to like remove old things. But it a lot of things do change. I feel like it's never in a steady state. So it's like, cool, Niagara. And it's like, Niagara is not performing. And it's like, oh, now it is performing. But now we're looking into a new rendering system and how we're handling X, Y, and Z. It's like, oh, man, this thing is never stopping. And it's really because, I mean, look how we're developing things from old school way, right? We had static meshes where example would be like you're looking at a door, right? The player in first person would look at a corner of the door. You're now calculating the full door, the full texture, everything with that component, right? Mm. But now using something like Nanite, it's such a different way of thinking about it where it's really just screen space. So it's like, no, don't draw the whole door in memory, just draw the geometry that is in view. And then virtual texturing, just draw the pixels and textures that are also in view to get the highest texel density. So you can imagine we went from making video games in a way where we were like looking at pools, right? Like bigger pools, like how many assets, and we set up the draw calls, and now we're heading towards just screen space. Like how much performance can we fit in the character's, you know, screen space? So it's just a very different way of even developing. So going from old school to new school, there's just so much now that you need to kind of take into consideration. And in the end, it's really, what is your end product? What are you developing? What is your game? Is it first person or top down? Because then you can still do maybe the old school system if you don't need things like Nanite, right? But it's always evaluating like what game you're making and what technology makes sense, you know, to build that product. So,
man, you'll be such a good teacher, honestly, because like the way you describe things, you make such a complex thing, like explaining the way it renders in such like very simplistic words. It shows how much you and your team try to explain things in simple words. Yeah.
Well, so we talk with clients. So when we're talking, like you said, with other studios, we need to let them know, like we know what to do, and us educating them as well, they go, oh, that does make sense. So the more we do educate people on just everything, pipeline frameworks, I realize it kind of like exposes things, you know, and they go like, oh, that is it. And then they kind of bring it up to their team and like, oh, that is missing. So it's definitely something that like with communication, communication is key for me. And also learn or like teaching, I would love to teach, right? Like if I could teach, right, if that could become a full-time thing, I think like that would be my retirement, right? Just teaching people doing for me. I mean, that would be fun. Like I love doing tech and teaching and things. So,
yeah, I definitely see you teaching 100%. Like, and also like that's one of the questions that I wanted to ask you in the beginning, like when you said that there was not much opportunities after COVID or in October, like did it not come to you eventually that maybe because tech art is such a principle where you have to be hired 15 years ago or 20 years ago, hired as a generalist and then just like by time with a lot of hard work and mistakes, you get to be a tech artist. And right now, like if I can't get into the industry, I kind of am without any guidance on tech art. Like, was that any of your like ways of income to make like tech art tutorials or free content out there?
Let's see. So My main thing would be like I enjoy showing what I do. So like even back in the day, trying to get into tech art and tech animation, I was constantly posting. So I would learn something from other tech artists that were smarter than me back in the day. Cool. Right. There's actually one her name was Gwen. I think she worked for 2K or something. Mm-hmm. She had a really cool demo of like how to have a rolling egg in Maya and how to have it stay on the ground and simulate while you're moving it around.
Cool.
And I remember taking that and creating something similar from there and just learning and posting it online, and people loved it. So, I would say like I've always been like, you share, right? So it's like you learn, you share, and then you grow. And then from a tech art standpoint, you get to see all those extra like little pieces. And that's why it's sometimes hard to be a tech artist, because it's like if you're a character artist, you can kind of start figuring out your tool set. And then if you're an animator, you can start figuring out your tool set. And sure. As a tech artist, here's your tool set. And it's like, which do you want to do? Houdini? Do you want to do Substance? Do you want to do Unreal? Do you want to do, you know, Unity? Whatever it is, CryEngine and things. So it's a much bigger pool. And even for myself, like I got into tech animation first. So it was easy for me. So I went from tech animation for about like 2 years, and then I started getting into Python programming, which then allowed me to start writing UV tools, figuring out like surface areas and figuring out automating like texel density. Because back in the day, we didn't have Unreal Engine. We were using, actually it was the Blue Point Engine back in the day. But we had to write UV tools to help tell the artists like, what is the texel density? Like, what texture size should I have on this cup? So we would have a tool where you would select the cup, and then you'd say, what is the size? And all it would do is it would measure the polygons, the surface area of the entire thing. So it would like unwrap it in that sense, like a UV. And then it would say, oh, this is the size in world space, so it should only be a 512 or a, you know, whatever it is.
Damn, that's such a good idea.
But that's how we had to manage it, right? Yeah. So we used to manage all the texel density by calculating it, because we didn't really have mipping as much. So we were just trying to figure out, how much textures can we fit into memory because like you don't want this cup to be super high dense and there's tons of pixels, because you're using a 1K texture, and then suddenly this thing here is using a 512 or whatever. You'll notice the visual texel density. So for something like Unreal Engine, I'm pretty sure that like there's a lot of just calculations where they're doing mipping. So that means everything can have a 1K map. And the difference is it's up to the camera to handle those mips. So it's actually doing lower. So further away, it's turning into a 512, and then when you're getting up close, it's 1012 or whatever. I mean, sorry, I said 512.
It's funny how back in the day, like, a lot of stuff were manual. Right now, it's just like, out of the box. Correct. It's for free. Go ahead and learn it. And
that's what you said before. Like we do make innovative tools, and they're not really innovative tools. It's actually taking these old processes that we've had, and then we're just really just streamlining them, right? So I feel like we don't do too many things that are like really, really new. But what we do is like take new technology that someone hasn't done before, and then we kind of implement and kind of feed it in. And actually a great example, last year, one of our last projects, we worked on it was like a runtime. I'm not sure if you know, there's like runtime telemetry, where it's like runtime real life data that you can grab and parse. So we worked on an F1 race. So it was a live race in Vegas. I forgot what it was called, F1 race. But this was last year. It was a live race where we were able to scrape all of the telemetry data of all the race cars. And then we were able to push that into Unreal Engine. So I still have the game in the demo. So we can hit run. And whenever those cars would drive in real life, they would actually drive within Unreal Engine. Wow. And we had the build, and I even set up three cameras on each car. So you can swap through virtually. So you can imagine, like, this is a real race, you're watching it virtually, but now it's meta, so you can do whatever you want. We can have it like Twisted Metal and have guns, or you could have people in their cars, you could have us another car in the, you know, whatever, however you want to broadcast this virtual race, you can now do, right? So it's like the sky's the limit, you can do whatever. But again, that was like taking technology, it hasn't been done. Well, I don't want to say it hasn't been done. I know that there are tech companies taking real-time telemetry data and doing things like things with weather, things with, again, racing. But that was our opportunity to take an API and do our own thing. And again, it was like, I haven't seen, you know, too many of those things working.
Yeah.
So like I said, I know like there are APIs that people are doing telemetry stuff, but I haven't seen anything like what we built. And what we built wasn't exactly the prettiest thing, but it was more of the technology, like the tech that was kind of built into it. Because we were getting all the telemetry data when the racers would put on the brakes of their car, right? We had everything. So that means we can even change the lights within Unreal Engine to break and do everything. So you're really just taking the real-time data and just like
feeding it them,
you know, virtually building it. Yeah, and I love it. Like, I, like that's the future. But now that's what tech art is, right? It's like taking things like motion capture, camera capture, and then putting it onto a character, and maybe that those two things just haven't been put together before.
That's
right?
So interesting. Like, I could see, as silly as it is, I could see like companies like WWE, right, who offer all those pay-per-view on a certain location. Yeah. I could see them like getting into something like that, virtual. Honestly.
Yeah.
Like putting sensors on the wrestlers and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, they could sell like, even basketball. Like right now, we can now grab skeletons. We can now just record without having motion capture, so it doesn't disrupt the actual event.
Oh.
But now cameras can give you that data. Now you can kind of just see it maybe running live, and then having it could be Muppets playing basketball, right?
Yeah.
So we can change and change the way we technically watch media or entertainment, right?
Oh yeah.
So it's like you don't have to see a boxing or UFC thing with two sweaty dudes. It could be like, you know, like I said, like two Muppets.
So it's more child friendly, maybe.
Yeah.
Is this made for kids? Yes.
Yeah. But it would. I could imagine just the simulation. So you're still getting it, and you can also see if someone gets, you know, KO'd or fall over. You can have the character ragdoll. So it is. It is more PC. That's like fun. You could have your kid possibly watch that stuff. So
man, that's interesting.
But the sky's the limit.
Like that changes the whole aspect of the ethics behind it, right? Like you probably can't show your kid that, right? But you as an adult can watch the UFC and with the blood and all the gore that comes with it. But a kid can maybe look at it as a Planet versus Zombies, you know?
Totally. And I mean, I thought about that. I'm upset because I have my son downstairs. He's 10 years old, and there are some really good games that are just like too gory. I was like, if I could just turn off the blood, like if I could just do that, he could now play this game. It would become more accessible for everyone. Then, you know, he can kind of purchase it. So again, this might allow people to do new things, you know, like being able to like you said, just like build new audiences with existing things that are already happening. So,
I think we're touching on something that have never been like really discovered that much.
Really done. It would be easy, right? Like the race thing that we did, we built in 2 weeks. It's like we could build a boxing one. We could build a basketball one. Like there is no limit. But I will also say I've been doing this for 15 years, right?
Yeah.
It took me probably 10 years to get to that point. So these other 10 years, it was me learning, like in, you know, like working with all the different teams and departments and not thinking about things outside of pipeline framework video games. Mm. So once I hit maybe 10 years, my brain started to go like, oh, wait, I like robotics, I like electronics, I like all these other things. So I started getting just more into programming and then stitching all these things together. But in the end, like I'm now probably just more of a programmer that knows how to build scalable pipelines and frameworks, and I know how to connect the pieces. But that's like now my secret sauce or my main thing that I do. Because it's hard for people to figure out. They go like, okay, we have a team, we have 30 people, we want to set up this boxing thing with motion capture and do X, Y, and Z. It's like, but where do we start? And then everyone kind of looks at each other like, I don't know, I can program, I can rig, I can do this. That's where it's a good opportunity for us to go like, okay, no, this is great. So here's a lot of places need a place to start. So you just start talking through it. Like, what is the goal? What are we trying to achieve? Okay, cool. We can do this, this, or this to achieve the motion capture, right? So then you start figuring out not one solution, but you kind of start breaking out multiple solutions, and you see which one has certain bottlenecks, which one might cause possible limitations or affect the product that you're making, right?
See, that is the thing where I think AI will never replace, is this put 10 creative people with like great communication skills together, have them bash some ideas, and then, you know, something comes out of it. I'm really glad that you're mentioning all of this, because that's not the aspect of like, that's not just mentioning game development, but also like real-time rendering, or
yeah, you break out eventually. You can. We feel like I never thought I could do it. That's why. So I thought I was a video game artist or whatever. They're like a tech guy.
Yeah.
And then I realized like, oh my gosh, no, I can go set up a car or go do whatever. I realized like the sky really is the limit.
Yeah.
So it just depends on what your goal is. And it is scary though. When the sky's the limit, that's actually a problem.
Yep.
Right? Sometimes.
Yep. I agree with you. I am a fan of freedom, but I hate freedom sometimes, because too much freedom is really a problem.
Yeah, so when I work on video games, I'm like, whenever they're like, "Hey, here's kind of what we're thinking, but this might kind of limit them from doing X, Y, and Z," I'm like, "No, limitations aren't bad. They give you a place to now kind of think through how do you work around it, and then how do you get the best, thing for your product." So limitations are not a bad thing, and that's actually a big downfall for us. It's like we can do everything. Cool, let's go build our own game. It's like, which one? Top down, virtual game, VR game, like. We don't even know. We kind of like lose ourselves eventually, where it's like we can do a lot, and that's why we do really good at co-development. But there are real teams right now that are just like, this is what we make, like Dark Souls or this. And those are the guys that are really good at like really keeping, like that IP, like moving forward,
Yeah,
and
like the
again, that's where the
directors, basically. I think it's if there's a role opposite of a tech art or a generalist is basically a director, someone who has the vision, knows exactly what it looks like, how it feels like, and can direct upon that. And we're like the scattered, we're like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna like
No, you're right.
if we weren't, we wouldn't have been, you wouldn't have been like as good as you are with everything, right? You're a true generalist, if you might say, like,
100%. I mean, think about it. A generalist, absolutely. Because I mean, I'll jump in through modeling, through animation, through rigging, through programming, through design, through blueprint, right?
Texturing.
So again, in the end, we're really just like, I turn myself into an indie developer, a professional, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that is what it is. Like indie developers, I give them more credit than most people. Like corporates, like AAA, we're like, oh, cool, you guys make really cool games. And then I meet all these, or I'm following a lot of these indie developers, like, no, they're doing the UI, they're doing the gameplay, they're doing the
Everything.
animations. Yeah, so there are people out there, and I think a lot of these tech art people, they're like secret indie developers,
Oh, not
which makes sense because
secretly.
they're general.
Honestly, a lot of the tech artists that I had on this podcast, they have an
Oh.
itch.io. Like you said, they're solo developers. They have tinkered mostly with like the programming side of things. They know
Yeah.
art. They could probably if they need to, but the thing is, they're mostly needed in the games. Like I have had one guest that didn't even have any portfolio, any reel, She just gets hired
Interesting.
because like since 10 years, all what she does is just like goes from this company to this company to this company, gets
That's
hired without a
the
portfolio because she's needed, right? That would be the ultimate goal. You don't have to market yourself, you don't have to do anything, you're
Correct,
needed.
yeah.
And I
Well,
think by the snap of her finger, she can anytime become an indie developer, like you said.
yeah. So even for myself, so I never had an issue getting jobs. So I could always jump around before I started our company. And then again, ever since COVID happened, things are harder. So one thing that I never stopped doing is creating demo reels. Like again, I've been doing this for so long. And even though people are like, for some reason, I have friends right now that are laid off and they don't have demo reels and they're trying to get their things together. And before I was ever laid off, like I could have a job working at Arcane and I'm still creating a demo reel almost every year. So I'm always doing tech and things on the side, and that's what I realize. I don't wait till I don't have a job to go make a demo reel. Every year or every 2 years or so, I get all the content the newest content, and I just kind of splice it together and keep it going. But I have a demo reel since like 2011 all the way up until this date. Like I have tons of demo reels. Like it's crazy.
And so that's the advice of today's episode. Have tons of demo reels. Always record your stuff, man.
Yeah, but you're learning too. So it's like keep yourself inspired. So it's like instead of just going like, oh no, I got laid off. I've applied to 100 places. I don't know what to do next. It's like no, go start building that product, like that project. Like if you're a modeler, build something so cool and start coming out that demo reel and just show that you're active, that you're moving forward. Because again, it's a roller coaster. Like this is like the worst slump, and if you can survive, and if you're building and learning, you're going to make yourself possibly open up a lot more doors when the opportunity does arise,
I'm gonna
right?
go with a hot take here. It's probably incorrect, but I'll go with it anyway, regardless. I feel like when you're hired, you are probably expected to be told what to do, and if you have went immediately school and job after that, regardless of game art or whatever it is, you are like literally you're a kid. You got told what to do by your parents, right? Church told you what to do. Then you went to school or mosque told you what to do. Oh, and then you go to like school and the university. They all tell you what to do. And then you go to the
We
job.
built
They fucking tell you what to do. And then you're
Yeah.
fired. What now?
Yeah. So just letting you know too, you probably know, but a lot of like these leads and directors and things, they're usually pretty secure and they just kind of like move around as well. But you are right. So and it depends on the position. If they're hiring you as a lead or a director, they do want you to be very like to take over those departments. But if you're a senior and you have a lead, or if you're, hiring to a place, a lot of times they do want you to work as well as you can with that person. But that lead and director could, maybe they're really good to work with, or maybe they're really shitty, right? And if they're really shitty, then yeah, you might just have to listen to them. And again, that's wrong. That's not what game development is. And that's why we were talking about just double A. Like, what is game development? It is, doesn't matter the hierarchy, doesn't matter whatever. It's just like, are you talented? Do you enjoy making this game? Are you going to help build it, right? Like that is really the core of going back to, again, these double A studios. And I think that is coming back.
That is coming back and coming back very strongly. Also, the idea of like having a team form up with a snap of a finger, right? In terms of like freelance and contracts, and then have it dissolve also with a snap of a finger. Like, have this agreement of like, let's do this project-based contract, get paid, right? Get paid really handsomely, and then right after, you know what? You have made so much money that you could,
On your
FO,
own.
and what is it called? FAFO, fuck around and find out. Right after that phase, like that is where I am right now. Right, I worked on a project for since October, since November, sorry, until now, and right now, like, I could say like, okay, I have some savings and things are really nice where I could go back on my podcast, have a nice conversation with people. That is my way of networking. I don't go to events, man. I don't need to go to events.
Me neither.
Like if
I
I
use LinkedIn.
yeah, like if I go to an event and I put 500 euros, 1000 euros, 200 euros on travel or whatever, I'm maybe gonna meet one tech artist or one VFX artist. Well, I could have the same experience by just reaching out online and have a podcast.
So we don't go to events, which we should, like GDC and everyone that we know goes to those events.
Yeah.
So it's good for us to go there to possibly get, I think, to secure bigger projects. But so far, because I'm so active on LinkedIn and we know everyone, the
Yeah.
same people that I would be meeting there, I already have, and we're already communicating. Like so each week I just like reach out to someone so I don't have to wait for an event, right?
Yeah.
So the good thing is, just don't wait for those things, because
I
things have
feel
changed.
like,
COVID didn't care.
honestly, if you
So
don't wait for those things, and you do it naturally, it comes out, it comes across more honest, right? You're
I
not
agree.
in this event and you're just like exchanging cards the whole time. By the end of
Yeah,
the
and
day,
you
you
have
have like.
businesses that all want that job, and it's like, who was, no, that's why, and I like to talk to them on one-on-one. So the cool thing is I have the ability to at least communicate with someone on LinkedIn, talk to a studio head or producer or whoever it is, and have a conversation where they go, oh, cool, they know what they're talking about. We need tech art help, X, Y, and Z, right? But I do follow since I have like 10,000 or almost 10,000 people on LinkedIn. So I see tons of stuff. It could be tech art projects. So that's another thing I would say as well is like get as well connected even as long as it's people within the industry because people share information and data and stuff. So it's like any job post or hey, the studio just opened maybe. Then it's like, oh, cool. Let me reach out and see who I might know that's going to this new studio. And then you can kind of inject yourself and see like how you might be able to help and do certain things. But that is really what it is. Yeah, I don't wait for events. I wait for those opportunities, and those are opportunities where it's like an organic opportunity throughout the year. There's tons. Things are always happening. So don't just wait like everyone else because then it's a big bubble. It's like who was the best looking guy that I talked to at this convention? Maybe when they'll get, who knows? Because it could be just like something silly, or who
Absolutely,
remembers?
man. Yeah, you're really right, and you're hitting it like on its head,
I'm
and
a
I agree
short guy
with
too, so I'd probably be like one of the least.
you. Well, I wish I could ask you how tall you are because I can't understand the inches and the feet. I don't get that. But
Oh, inches and feet, yeah. I
that
mean, I am short. So I am 5'3", which is like the
Dude,
average height around a
wait.
Japanese female, is
Oh
what I heard.
wait. I think I know how tall you are. We might be the same height, right? Let's
No
see, let's
way.
see, let's see, let's see. So, wait, is it inches? Okay, 5'4". Okay, I'm taller
Dude,
than
there's
you.
no way. You're 5'5", at
I'm
least.
five
If not,
four,
then
165
okay.
centimeters. Very
Yeah,
short.
so 1 inch taller. Yeah, we're 1 inch taller than me. Well, I mean, look, I mean, I got the hair right now.
Yeah,
we'll call it the same.
I'm losing mine, so it's all good. If it makes you feel good about yourself. No, I mean, we're practical. We fit in airplanes, you know. We're
good. Yeah, awesome. And the luggage on the airplanes, the top of the airplanes, absolutely. The back of the airplane.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we don't need as much food. We're good for the environment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a win-win-win.
It is true, yeah. Well, I think I may have messed up, you know, like the, what is it, like the Littleman syndrome or something like that. It's like Napoleon syndrome. So I bought this house too, and it's like a big Texas house, and I just feel like a little person in this big, like even the doorway is like 12 feet tall.
You know? Oh my God, really? And in Europe, it's a bit,
no,
it's
probably
a bit 10
better.
Feet,
but
oh my God. That's so fun, man. Listen, I have to go very soon. Is there anything you would like to put? We have 10 more minutes. Is there anything you would like to plug here?
Not so much. I would just say, like, anyone that is, you know, struggling, because again, that's like the biggest thing. Just don't give up, because that's, like I said, that's when you lose. And just like, get inspired, find things that inspire you. Art inspires people. So like, find those fun projects, do it and post it. You know, show your learnings, check out new technology, and just be active. And if you do it, because learning sucks sometimes, but if you can just like learn the new technology that everything's coming out, you'll at least be on the cutting edge. So, you know, just open up opportunities. And that's all I'd probably recommend out of this whole conversation. That's it.
How often have you invested in yourself in that way and it's always paid out? How often was that the case?
Like I told you, that almost all the time, like I haven't stopped making demo reels and things. So even while I had a job, I always like people still wanted to communicate and possibly hire me because I was still posting on YouTube, posting on, you know, LinkedIn, just like the things that I'm constantly learning. So it's like, oh, wow, that just came out. We're trying to learn Lumen, or we're trying to learn Nanite. So you're showing that you already have kind of a basis once the technology comes out, showing that you're kind of messing with it and trying to learn it. Like what we talked about, just like draw calls to using Nanite, right? Just going through those processes and sharing, it gets other people online get excited as well. They go, this person likes to share. They might actually be even cool to talk to and to work with. Because a lot of people are like, no, if I show this, then 100 other artists are going to be able to do the same thing, and then I'm not going to be able to get my job. And to me, it's the opposite. It's like, no, let them. If 100 artists, you do teach 100 of them, eventually one of them might actually help you get a job, you know? And it does go both ways, you know? So some artists will keep things to themselves. I'm say artists, it's everyone. Programmers, artists, humans, business people. And then the other, it's all about sharing and being organic. So if you want to open yourself, and if you're looking for a job, like to me, that's how you do it. That's how I even built everything on LinkedIn. I gave out free tech art services. I do whatever I can. I try to help people. But that's how you build that network. You know, you can't just like hold things to yourself, because then it's even hard to connect, you know? So you share something on LinkedIn, you share some really cool information, you're going to get a lot of people from the industry wanting to connect with you to learn more. So.
Absolutely. I think that's such a great advice to give out there. Because I think a lot of people, artists and developers, as you said, get too skeptical about something. They're like, nah, maybe I'm coming across a bit too scammy, maybe it's transactional, maybe it feels materialistic. What would you say to people like that?
Can you rephrase that a little?
You know, like if you do that thing, like you keep posting, you keep like making yourself out there and everything, it might come across as materialistic. So what is the fine line between like reaching out to someone and also expressing interest in working with them, but also not seeming materialistic?
Yeah. So especially from like my side, because that is a thing. Like I started losing myself at one. Well, I don't want to say I lost myself. I caught myself before I started doing it. But I started getting a lot of traction on LinkedIn. It was because they were authentic, honest information posts. Mm-hmm. And even my posts, I was like, hey, come check this out. It was like very basic. I wasn't like, so it all comes down to the post when you're like, check out the latest technology from, come check it out here, click here. And then you're like, here's a breakdown. It's like too formalized or too whatever. You start building a brand for yourself and people will still follow you, but it becomes less authentic. So what I would say is like, when you do posts, just like post as yourself, you know, as a developer, as someone that's learning, even if people are following you and you're building that brand, don't lose that, because that's why they're following you in the first place. If you're just another brand, a tutorial, you kind of take away that I don't know, that energy, that sense of, I guess, self in that sense, but
Yeah, and it's, I think that's such an important thing to talk
don't
about.
pretend that you're a brand, like, don't get into that realm.
Yeah.
Just keep posting your stuff. You are a brand, you can still market yourself as a brand, but don't come off as fake, because that's how fake information, or like, you're just trying to get followers, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not the goal, right? So it's like, really put out information that is very useful. Don't, like, some, actually, a lot of people on LinkedIn, a lot of other channels, they'll just constantly post famous work and famous tech that other people are doing, just because they're getting a lot of people to follow their pages on LinkedIn, right?
Oh.
So that is the thing. So don't be one of those people that you're just like, I share work from people that I know directly, but I don't just share the top work, like, hey, MetaHuman, whatever came out. Don't just be that person to just do it to get more and more people to follow your LinkedIn. To me, you kind of dilute it to, even myself, I start block, or not blocking, I unfollow some of those people, because I don't want to just see people just constantly rehashing and trying to get more people, more followers, more views, right?
Yeah.
So again, organic, be yourself, and the more you do it, the more posts you'll get. You build your brand by learning how to be yourself and how to present that. So,
Yeah, I think the more you do it, the better you get at it. And I think, like,
correct.
especially in this age with like AI around, finding one's identity is becoming the difficult part because everything is like been handed to AI. And like,
That's
you
how you
know.
filter. Like, I see it. Like, those posts too. Like, when you're saying, like, what's real and what's raw and what's not, like, how can you kind of even decipher some of that? It's like, a lot of times, like, your post, I'll even do it, so don't get me wrong. I'll put into ChatGPT to make sure my corrections, spelling, and things are there, but I won't let it rewrite it or write it from scratch. I realize when you just ask ChatGPT to write whatever, it becomes like just that business brand.
Yeah.
It's that thing that people go, ugh, like, it's a cool post, but all the information here just kind of feels kind of fake. Like, yeah, you get it.
Yeah, no, I get it 100%. I guess the struggle is like when there's someone who has gotten their English knowledge by birth versus someone
Correct.
who like is inconfident about their English and how they come across because they don't see, like
Yeah,
I, for
just don't do
example.
business posts though. Like, you can still be yourself,
Yeah.
So so you still should write it in your own language on how you feel and how you want to show people.
Yeah.
And then use AI to translate that. At least you're like, that's also what I do,
Absolutely.
right?
Yeah.
I'll send my message, but what I'm getting at is, like, don't go in there and say, like, hey, here's a post, just write me up a post, because that's where a lot of people are doing. And they sound great, they hit the point, but there's no life in it. There's
Yeah.
no, like, I just keep scrolling, because if I'm scrolling and someone does a cool thing and they're like, hey, come check out this cool puppet thing that I made, it's like, I'll actually stop and check it out, because it feels like that this person is really, like, they actually care about what they're developing, what they're showing me,
No, absolutely. Hey, listen, man, this has been great. And thank you for sharing all this those insights because I think like right now, especially in this age of AI, it's very important to know and to emphasize identity, to emphasize the uniqueness of each person, basically. Because like the most unique thing in the world, in the universe, is you yourself. That is the most
Correct.
unique thing. All right, man, it's been amazing. I gotta bounce, but we will still talk for like 2 or 3 minutes or something like that. But I will say it to the viewers. Thank you for watching. It's been Jack the Generalist, and as always, I'll see you in the next one. Bye, everyone.
See you again.